two. Hello, everyone. This is the Final Play podcast, where this week we're talking about the two grand final qualifiers and then the lead in, obviously, to the grand final. And just a bit of previews of news around the NRL and maybe an Antonio Brown story about the NRL, which, you know, it's Antonio Brown, so he seems to be everywhere.
He is everywhere at the moment.
My name's Jason, as previous broadcasts. How are you, Miles?
No plans to change it. No, I am. I'm very good.
Unless Antonio Brown,
yeah, it was pretty. Maybe. Yeah, no, well, that's, that Antonio. Yeah, what's there? What the hell is he doing watching rugby league? Anyway, the two games over the weekend were very entertaining.
Very. Especially the first one, the Raiders and the Rabbitohs in front of a massive crowd for GIO Stadium. Well, I couldn't find a spare seat, 26,567 to see the Raiders.
They say it's a grand record?
Yeah, yep, getting over the Rabbitohs 16-10. I mean, it's just from start to finish, even just from start, like pre-game, that Viking clap alone, like, you know, the whole crowd was just electric the whole time. And it wasn't like they quieted down. They loved it. It was amazing. It was a really, really good atmosphere.
Yeah, no, the people of Canberra definitely embraced a grand final qualifier being in their backyard. So I thought that was a good way to kick the weekend off with that on the Friday night. So, and just even better play, like, you know, the score probably doesn't tell you the story about how dominant I think Canberra were. I think they monstered. They absolutely monstered the Rabbitohs up front. The Canberra forwards were absolutely sensational, especially Papali. Like, obviously he got man of the match, but he was insane.
I mean, like, look, they were definitely dominant in the middle, but the Rabbitohs had plenty of chances and probably could have snuck away and won that. Like, definitely. They were definitely in it towards the end, and that sort of I guess right at the end there when they had a chance to win it. They were in it. So you're right. The score doesn't justify, I guess, how well, you know, Josh Papali and the Raiders played. But I didn't expect much from South, and yeah, they stayed there the whole time.
Well, they just showed their class and showed you why they finished in the top four. You know what I mean? Like that they were a good side most of the year.
Yeah.
And, you know, even down a few troops with, you know, James Roberts, not so much a late exclusion, but, he had that. I'm pretty sure they said it was compound dislocation of the thumb.
Yeah.
So that means the skin's been broken. So I think Wayne Bennett pretty much had the decision already made from him. He wouldn't have been able to play. So that was a bit of a big out, I think, you know, not having that strike power of him. Moved Gagai into the centres.
Yeah, who played very well at the centre. Like, he was.
That's right. I think the more time he spends in a centre, because he's essentially spent the whole year on the wing, at the start of the year he was playing centre, and then when they picked up James Roberts from the Broncos, then he got shunted out to the wing. I don't think he liked that too much. So I think he relished the chance to be playing back at centre again. But
And I could see them, you know, forming like the two centres. Like, these are two, you know, I guess Queensland centres, really, if you sort of, you know, at least all Queensland backs. So I'd love to see them both playing one side and the other next year.
Yeah, no, it's a definite possibility.
Yeah, I don't know who favours what side. I don't know. That was I thought when, I guess, James Roberts was going there, that they would have a left centre or a right centre, that those two would be that. But maybe, you know, James Roberts favours right centre, and then so does Dane at Gagai, so they shunted him out. I'm not really sure. But
Yeah, I'm not sure, but he definitely got pushed out to the wing when Roberts got there. Definitely. So I think that sort of created a little bit of tension throughout the early part of that pairing.
Yeah.
But it looked good. I mean, nothing really sort of came of it after that. So there's not really too much to sort of say about that. You know, he wasn't there, and the Rabbitohs had to deal. So. Yep.
And that was
it was a one-on-one strip-a-thon.
Yeah, that was the next thing I was going to say.
Even throughout the next game, you know, even throughout the Roosters Melbourne game, there was one-on-one steals everywhere, you know. But Hodgson got one early, and pretty much it was four plays later after he pinched the ball and they scored.
So he must.
So
like,
that's how much that, you know, that it can turn a game. That he's got the steal, and then they've capitalized on it straight away.
He must have a specific call, because when I watched that first one, there was three
isn't
in the tackle.
Isn't it money or something? Isn't it money or something like that?
I don't know, something that no one's... That.
Yeah, they've...
Yeah.
They've said it before.
Other teams haven't picked it up. Like, they have three. He can see, he clearly says something, and they just drop off, and he just rakes the ball out. Like, it's a great set.
He must know that's a minute. They obviously know that he's got it. Like, he's pretty much got it. And I can't remember. I'm sure I'd heard him talk about it on one of the Fox League shows where they said it's something. He says money or something like that. And that, yeah, and then they know to drop off.
They just drop off. Yeah.
But he must know. He must already know he's got it.
Yeah. Well, he's probably got his hands on the ball, or at least, like you said, and he must know he's at least got some sort of thing, and they just drop off, and he, considering, up to that game, he's done, including that game, he's done 15 one-on-one strips, and the next person's four.
Yeah, sure.
And I think that the next person, if I was reading it correctly, was another player in Canberra.
I think it was
Elliot Whitehead. There's Whiteman or Bateman.
Couldn't remember if it was Whitehead or Bateman. It was one of the other Raiders.
They're the greatest exponents of it, and it clearly works. So, I know a lot of ex players now have come out and said they don't like the rule. There's certain people who come out and say, like the rule. I don't mind it. I think it can change.
The only people who come out and don't like the rule are the ones that haven't exploited it yet.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, that's exactly right. That was John
Sutton's
last game too. Sorry,
yeah, that's right. And he ended up getting a one-on-one steal at the end there, and that sort of led to their final try in the last minute. But that was a little bit too little, too late. But that was his last game. So, you know, happy trails to Johnny Sutton. You know, he's done the club proud. He's a premiership winning captain, so not too many sort of South Sydney players can say that. And the thing that I always found stunning is that a club with a richer history is what they've got. You know, that they're one of the original clubs of rugby league in Australia, and they've never had a 300 gamer.
And yeah, correct. And he's a one club man.
He
didn't go to
any
other
club. He's their only one. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So
nobody else has played 300 games for the club. So that's I thought that was interesting. When did he rack it up this year? I think he got the 300 games last year.
334. So he must have got it last year. Yeah.
Yeah, it would have been last year. A club that's been around for 111 years.
Yeah.
Has not had somebody who's played 300 games for them. So
yeah, true.
The Cowboys have only been around for 20 odd years, and they've got Thurston's 294, I think. So, you know, they've nearly got, and Matty Bowen's like 270. So
yeah, true. Yeah.
And it's gonna be different. It's different in this sort of era of rugby league as well, where, you know, there's a lot of chopping and changing. So
I think it's different in the era of sports. There's a lot of chopping. You know, you can go through any sports, and I think it's very, very rare that you have one team, one player, a team that stays with that team for their whole career. It's very rare to see these days.
Yeah, that's right.
You were okay with Josh Papali's tackle, just sort of quickly. He's been let off, but you're all right with it.
It looked bad initially. I thought he might have been in a bit of strife.
Yeah.
But the more you sort of look at, and he hasn't gone in there intentionally. It wasn't a shoulder charge because his arm was out. He's hit him flush, and the intensity of the hit. It's like his body sort of bounced up a little bit off the ball and off the arm, and has collected him in the head. Yeah. So, you know, a penalty being on report, obviously worthwhile for the match review committee to come along and have a look at it, and they've cleared him. So, you know, I didn't really have a huge problem with it. Obviously, Dewey had to go to the had to go in for the head injury assessment, and he ended up coming back. So, it didn't adversely affect him too much. It was only he had to be off for that 15 minutes while he was getting the head check. But I didn't really have a large problem with it.
No, that was my feeling as well. Like it looked worse than it probably actually was, I guess.
It looked brutal when it first happened, because Dewey stayed on the ground and he looked like he was KO'd. I didn't think he was coming back. So the other thing that I sort of noticed as well, if the Rabbitohs, especially in the second half, how often they got caught with the ball on the fifth tackle.
Mm.
I reckon it happened at least four or five times in that. They were inside, they were inside the Raiders red zone.
Yeah.
And, you know, inside the 20, and they got caught with the ball on the sixth tackle.
Yeah.
They couldn't get a kick in. It was weird. It's like, oh, all right. That's, Cody Walker was good. Yeah. He was very heavily involved in a lot of the playmaking of that, and it was I don't know if that was sort of a game plan to sort of get him a lot more involved, which is good in a way, but also bad in a way, because that means it takes away that game management skill of Adam Reynolds. It was a good and a bad thing. So, but that was just one thing there that I sort of noticed. They got caught with the ball a lot on that sixth tackle, and by and large, that was the difference in the end. They couldn't get those good attacking options, either force a dropout or try and score a try.
Yeah. Both halves played pretty well. Adam Reynolds' kicking game was pretty good again. Probably get the kicking game in their own 50, not in the opposition's 50. Clearly, because
that's right. Yeah, coming out. Oh well, that's right. They got pinned down in their own half so often.
Yeah, so him getting him out there was.
Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, I mean, full credit to Raiders. Their first grand final. Their first grand final in 25 years. So
yes, it's 1994,
which they won against the Bulldogs. So.
That sounds about right. Well, that was Mel's last game.
Yeah. I think they still had
Ricky Stewart and Laurie Daly there. So, you know, they had a pretty stacked team.
Yeah, no, that was a massively stacked team when the balls were like, I think, about 4 kilos of lead balls, and Ricky Stewart was.
I think they might have been coming out of that. They might have actually been using rubber, but sort of rubber balls by
rubber
then.
Rubber balls or something. I don't know, because I remember Ricky Stewart throwing these 30-meter passes. 36.
He must have been a tank back in the day, like, to be able to throw that leather ball that far.
Yeah.
Especially if it was soaking wet, like, he must have been a tank.
Their team was like, so these are the standouts: Mullins, Ken Nagus, Meninga, Ruben Wickie, Noah Nandruku, Laurie Daly, Ricky Stewart, Steve Walter,
Bradley
Jason Croker,
Bradley Clyde,
David Ferner. So their 1-13 was absolutely ridiculous. Quinton Ponga.
Yeah, so, insane. Oh, Quinton Ponga, good God.
Was there a young
Ruben Wickie in there as well?
Yeah,
playing at center.
Yeah, yeah. So
he was playing at center.
They
and by the end of his career, he turned into a prop. Oof.
Interestingly enough, just with that game, I guess just before we move on, they only had two bench players that whole game. Maybe because they had start 13, but they only had two bench players. Like, and every record, they only had Brett Heffington and David Wesley. So, but if you go through their 1-13, like, you probably take nobody off anyway.
So, no, exactly. It'd be like, who are we taking off? Nobody.
Nobody. next game, the Roosters and the Storm. A better crowd than I thought it was going to be in 32,814. Seeing
apparently
the Roosters,
they had to give away a buttload of free tickets for people to go as well.
Yeah, well, which is, I guess, disappointing because this is really a grand it had that.
That's rather sad.
It's definitely. Sydney being Melbourne.
Yeah, the game, but there's the rivalry there, so you think that'd get people interested and excited about it, but unfortunately, the nostalgia is there a little bit, but the SCG is just not a rugby league ground anymore. We've moved on from that.
You're right.
Yeah. No. We've moved on from having rugby league at the SCG. I think the last grand final there was it 88 or 80, 87 or 88, and then they moved over to the Sydney Football Stadium.
Yeah. You can't.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
I mean, you look at that Bankwest Stadium that we've been going on about all year. You can't have a circular field with a rectangular game, or a circle stadium with a rectangular game. It just doesn't work.
Not anymore.
You just don't get the atmosphere.
It's a different era. That it's different now. So there's plenty of rectangular, soccer/football purpose built stadiums around.
Yeah.
So it's just unfortunate that Allianz had to be demolished, so they could redo it, which is just. That's just crazy. That's such a waste of money. A waste of money.
Just on that too, before I started, got the late news that because ANZ's getting then redesigned as well, there's still no guarantee between the New South Wales government and the NRL of having the grand final in Sydney next year.
No, well, yeah, it's going to be the next two grand finals will be not at ANZ Stadium. They're doing a full reconfig. The capacity of the grand is going from 86.5 down to 70.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. So, but yeah, I've sort of heard that there's umming and ahhing and it's a bit up in the air about. I'm pretty sure next year is locked into the SCG, but I don't know if they're going to try and. It hasn't.
No, so it was literally.
I think they need to go. Okay, let's have one at the SCG next year, and then 2021, take it to Suncorp.
Well, that's what I was about to say. Bring up the Suncorp, because next year there's still no agreement between the New South Wales government and the NRL to have it anywhere in Sydney, because I think I think the NRL have looked at what's happening with the NRL's what's happening, I guess, with the SCG and how the games are being perceived there, that there is no lock-in yet for it there. So I'm not a Queensland fan. I'd love to see it at Suncorp, because that atmosphere would be terrific. Insane. It would be terrific.
It'd be ridiculous. It wouldn't matter what teams it was. It's insane. I've been there for an origin. I've been there for a couple of origins. I've been there for the Broncos and the Cowboys, and it's just electric. It's insane. I love the stadium. I don't think it's too big for the Broncos Cowboys. I had like massive nosebleed seats, like right up in the top section, and it still didn't feel like you were that far away
from
everything. Terrifically designed. Yeah. It's a terrifically designed stadium, obviously purpose built for, rugby league/rugby union, the rectangular, the rectangular field games, you know, and soccer to a less extent with the Brisbane, I was about to call them the Brisbane Lions then, the Brisbane Roar. The Brisbane Roar playing there as well. So it's a terrific stadium, and I don't know why the pushback. You know, they're not going to, that's ANZ Stadium's not going to be ready. So
no, correct.
It's a no brainer.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, going off, they haven't obviously, there's still no agreement. I mean, look, Sydney, I guess, is the spiritual, like, and Bennett, a lot of people or coaches have said this. Sydney is, yes, the spiritual home of rugby league, but.
Of course.
I mean, you can look at any state of origin that happens in Queensland, and the atmosphere is just insane. Yes, it might be only 50 to 60,000 people, but.
Yeah, 50, yeah.
That's who cares?
Oh, 52 I mean, and a half, so.
It's going to be a grand final that that Brisbane appreciate. Brisbane appreciate rugby league, so there's no there's no reason why they can't give it to them. Doesn't matter who's playing.
It's a no brainer. It really is. Look at the success of the Magic Round at the
year. Yeah, it was absolutely successful. You know, a whole weekend.
It doesn't matter. This is just.
Yeah, I completely agree.
They were just normal club games. They weren't finals or anything like that.
No.
So, and I think, yeah, that's, I mean, I think the Brisbane public would appreciate it. It'd be obviously be unprecedented, like you said, and like I know that, you know, from growing up watching rugby league, that of course, you know, it was called the New South Wales Rugby League for the longest time before they called it the ARL. And, you know, of course Sydney's the spiritual home ground, but this is just unforeseen circumstances where the New South Wales government have decided to demolish their two biggest stadiums one upgrade and one demolish, but to the SCG, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I completely agree. So with that game, the Roosters beating the Storm 14-6. It was a bang start, especially in that first 20 or 30 seconds with the two big boppers on Nelson.
19 seconds.
Because on the sin bins, it's got 0 minutes. So,
0 minutes before the kickoff.
I guess this, again, this is the whole precedence thing. They've set a precedence, so.
No, of course.
I mean, Nelson.
Who did you think that was instigated by? Who was that instigated by?
I don't know. I tried to sort of. I guess I looked back on it. It looked like it was Ciasosa that instigated it, but
it was Taukeiaho. He put the knee up. He was crowding. He lifted the knee, and I don't think Asafa Solomona liked that very much. And, you know, he sort of lashed out and pushed. And then, Taukeiaho sort of, didn't really like that. And the cameras went away from him a little bit and you could see him. He was cocking the hammer. He was ready to go. He wasn't taking a backseat at all. So I thought that was, and the penalty, as the penalty went down.
Yeah.
As the penalty went down, it went against the Storm.
Yeah, that was my, because where I watched it, like, there was no sort of sound, but why is that? Because
for Asafa Solomona lashing out first. It wasn't for crowding in the play the ball or anything of that, and Taukeiaho lifting his knee. It was the first initial contact by Asafa Solomona, because he lashed out, you know, he sort of lashed out and lunged forward. With his arm, and that's and then Taukeiaho, Taukeiaho cocked the hammer. He wanted some.
That'd be the last person I'd cock the hammer to. That dude is a monster.
Oh my god.
he was just laughing. What a laugh. He had the big smirk on his face the whole time. And
he had
a good half a foot on that guy.
Oh my god.
On Taukeiaho.
He's a serious beast.
He's a beast. the thing I guess I noticed with that game is the Storm just couldn't penetrate the Roosters' defense. Like it looked like everything they were throwing at them, it just didn't go anywhere, and like literally nowhere.
I thought the Storm just looked a little disjointed in attack.
Yeah,
a lot of that game, And I think that was brought about by the fact that they couldn't crack the line.
Yeah. Yep.
And they couldn't crack the they couldn't get over the they didn't score until the second half. You know, how often do you hear of Melbourne being scoreless at half time? And it was only Asafa Solomona that went over just on a pure barging run. So there was no, you know, there was no finesse play or there was no skill play that got them over the line. It was all very, very handsomely shut down by the Roosters. It was a clinical performance. You know, and Melbourne played pretty good, you know, pretty tough defense as well.
Yeah. I think that both teams were, it was a defensive show.
Obviously. Yeah, no, that's me. Both these games, obviously, not super high scoring, which you don't generally see in these types of games that the score is insanely high or you know lopsided either way. Even though sort of just having flashback memories of 2005 where the Cowboys thumped the Eels 29-0 in a on a lopsided grand final qualifier. That's just something that's sprung to mind just now. But that's see lopsided. Grand final qualifiers. They're generally both teams are very stoush in defence. And these top four teams were the top four defensive teams in the league all year. So it's no surprise that both of these games were, total points, obviously 20 and 26. So that, being in that, there was always going to be a bit of a defensive slog. Both of these games.
I guess the thing that, because it was such a defensive game and Melbourne couldn't get through, I thought Cameron Munster was pretty quiet that entire game. You know, like I wouldn't expect a lot from Jerome Hughes and even Pappenhausen. Like he went off for 12 minutes, but he still banged out 222 meters. But yeah, I just thought Munster didn't really have that attacking prowess that he's had during, I guess, the year.
For me, I sort of go back to just a bit of continuity in the halves.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? In a pressure cooker situation, because Hughes has only been at that halfback position for the last five weeks?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was six to eight weeks.
I thought Bellamy's, he's probably left it a little bit too late to sort of, say to Brody Croft, oh, you're on the nose, with us, and we're going to go with Ryan Pappenhausen at fullback, and put Hughes in the halfback position. So, I think it just come down to a little bit, pressure cooker situation and that little bit of continuity with your halves, and if Munster and Croft are a little bit more comfortable with each other, whereas possibly not that Munster and Hughes aren't as accustomed to each other in that high stakes environment.
And that's what a couple of my mates that were actually supposed to be dialing in tonight were going to bring up, is that was it probably still a better idea of keeping Brody Croft there for the year, have Pappenhausen as an impact player? It might have actually, I guess, changed. It could have been a lot better for them. Because Ryan Pappenhausen is great. It's just
he's terrific.
You're right. It's exactly what you just said. I think Brody Croft could have steered the ship, and then Pappenhausen come on as an impact player. But
But then they've got to, the thing is, then they've got to keep making the decision of who are we taking off to put Pappenhausen on, and then what they've done. I think Bellamy made that knee jerk change after the Canberra game, to put Chambers on the bench and to bring in Curtis Scott.
Yeah.
So I thought that was different as well. That sort of upsets the balance of the team a little bit as well, because then Chambers goes back to the bench. That sort of puts him out of his comfort zone a little bit. I think just little changes like that, especially in finals environment, you want as much, as consistency and continuity with your players as possible. And how many times has Curtis Scott started at center this year?
Yeah, true. Although I thought, you're right. I mean, it's probably the same sort of continuity. I guess I thought that Curtis Scott was a good move purely because of how well he played last week. And he did really quieten down.
Oh, yeah, no.
Terrell Mitchell.
He warranted selection. But it's, you know what I mean? Like, you know, Bellamy's in charge. He's there to make the big call. So he's made the call. You know, whether you want to say it's backfired or not, as it, you know, and there's also the possibility that Curtis Scott's not even going to be there next year. And there's also rumors flying about that the Broncos should go hard at trying to get Chambers. And then Curtis Scott could possibly stay at Melbourne.
Okay. That's, wow. Okay. That's actually not that bad. Like, I guess bad for, well, both of them, bad for Chambers and not too bad for the Broncos.
Yeah,
that'll
be.
I think it'd be a top move. Yeah, that'll be because, you know, a veteran player coming in. Well, veteran enough. Like, yeah, I suppose a veteran or Queenslander coming in. Yeah, definitely a veteran player. That's not a bad idea. I mean, he'll probably have to take a pay cut, but I mean, you got Jack Bird.
Oh, yeah.
You know, depending on what happens to Jack Bird, but that's actually a really good idea.
Jack Bird's on the outer, so there's 800,000 you can free up.
Yeah, well. Hopefully. It was just that, I guess, just finishing on the Roosters and Melbourne. It was that typical, Roosters performance. Same sort of what, I guess, going on what Melbourne didn't do. Like, they steered the ship very well. Tedesco is just watching that guy is insane.
Since he's been injury free, he's arguably the best player in the game.
I agree. I think he is, I guess, well, he's probably not Dally M. I'd say to me, he's Clive Churchill favorite.
He's the Dally M winner. Don't worry
really?
About it.
Really? Yeah. Well, I was going to say Golden Boot. Okay. I'm
supremely confident that he is going to be the Dally M winner.
What does Sportsbet say? It's probably him as well.
Well, when I was watching a little bit of Fox League last night, it came up that he's paying $1.40. So I think I think he's got it in the bag.
Okay, maybe he does have it in the bag.
So last thing about that game. Like, I think the Storm, their confidence, I think, took a really big hit when they come out at the start of the second half, mm-hmm. and they had all of that time of possession inside the Roosters 20, inside the Roosters 10, they forced three dropouts in a row, and they couldn't crack them.
Yeah,
and that was a huge turning point. I think the Roosters would have gained a lot of confidence out of that, and going, right, you know, we've just held out, we've taken their best shot. Or, you know, as best shot as they can give straight up after the half, where everyone should be fairly fresh, and mm-hmm. they've repelled them, and that shot them, I think. And I think the Roosters would have gained a lot of confidence out of that, and that, righto, you know, we've definitely got them rattled now, and yeah, let's go on with the job.
Yeah, and they really did. Like, the Roosters really, yeah, took them to the nose and grinded out the win, which is like what Melbourne do. And like what Melbourne do. They did exactly what Melbourne do. So,
yeah.
And yeah.
They just ground them out of the game.
It wasn't the greatest game to watch, I guess, like in the finals, but this is a finals game and defense, you know, wins games, like the old adage. So,
doesn't matter how you win.
Correct. So they deserve to win. Like, they played well enough to deserve the win. Which I guess then puts us into the grand final of the Roosters versus the Raiders. Which, if you could go back 12 weeks ago, I mean, I would have threw the Roosters in there, but Raiders.
I guess
a Cinderella story.
Yeah, they've been. They've been terrific all year. They've taken their opportunities. They've knocked Melbourne off twice. In a year, which, you know, which not many teams can go out there and say that they've done, and especially knock Melbourne off in a finals game, which is even, you know, an even rarer sort of occasion. So I think the grand final, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be sort of one of those slog them down, drag them out sort of games again. It's going to be one up front.
Yep.
And
yeah, definitely.
It'll either be Tedesco, who's the X factor, who's normally going to be the X factor anyway for the Roosters, or that back line for the Raiders.
I completely agree. I think Tedesco has to be that X factor. He has been all year.
I'm not super confident in Aiden Caesar and Jack Whiten to be able to shine, like to outshine, you know, to for one of them to be super dominant. Like they've been terrific at working as, you know, a halves combination and a halves team. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, there's not really, one real standout. You know, Whiten's got a terrific running game and Caesar's got a huge boot on him. And, you know, he's a good game manager, and it's also good having that sort of left-right combination. Is Jack Whiten a left-footer as well?
He is a left-footer because that's how he got that beautiful little try on the that try that he scored, that little kick to himself and sort of scored. You're right. I mean, I think Aiden Caesar really needs to steer the ship if they're going to win, because looking at the way Jack Whiten plays, he has that, I guess, he's a running player. He has that fullback 5'8" mentality.
That's right. You can't rely on his calming kicking game. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, he's got a big boot on him, and he's not the greatest game manager. But obviously Caesar's got to be able to do that. But Hodgson as well. Like, you know, he's got to be able to control the game as well at a dummy half, a la Cameron Smith. So, you know, he's obviously going to be a huge part, and that's where the Roosters is probably their only weakness at the moment is dummy half. But they don't really have to worry about that, because they've got an insane forward pack, and you know, their back lines in form. So, you know, they're coming good at the right time of year. That to me is the only Roosters weakness is dummy half.
Yeah, and then hopefully, I guess the only way to win is for Josh Hodgson to exploit that, that up the middle. But
a lot of that comes off a good platform going forward and fast play the balls, and then Josh Hodgson will become very hard to stop.
So who are you throwing out there? Who do you think is going to win?
Oh, you know, I've been saying it for a little while now. I don't think anyone's going to trouble. I thought Melbourne probably would have been the only one that could have given the Roosters any trouble. Yeah. And I'm just going to stick tried and true. You know, it's kind of boring. But, you know, the Roosters have you know, okay, they finished second by a large margin. But, you know, you can just tell at these finals that they've gotten good at the right time of year. You know, Melbourne looked rattled throughout the final series.
Yep.
So, and not to say that Canberra can't do it. I think it'd be a fairly close game, but I think the Roosters are going to have too much class, and obviously the experience of being in these big games recently, you know, obviously from last year's grand final and some of the big games that they've played this season already. You know, not so much with relative ease, but you know, they've got the big name players, and you know, they've got a lot of representative players in their team. So you don't think that the occasion is going to get too much of them.
No, I completely agree. Just before we move on to the news, there looks like Paul Pierce will be at the grand final with Jonathan Thurston. You didn't know that? What are you shaking your head for?
No. That's, oh, my God. Paul Pierce lost, just sort of off topic and a little bit off tangent. He'd lost all respect out of me with all that rubbish he was spewing on bloody NBA Countdown.
Okay.
And, he just, anyway, dude, I don't want to go into this as rugby league. So we can go into that on an NBA podcast. He just lost all credibility with some of the garbage he spewed out of his mouth on NBA Countdown, which was just rubbish.
So you have a chance to meet him and Thurston if you enter a competition to be on the sideline with them for the grand final. So it's called a Be a Legends tour.
If I won that, I would just be talking to Thurston.
Well, if we both, because you can take someone. So
it wouldn't even be worrying about the truth.
I'd have to say hello at least. You know, sort of talk a little bit to him.
I'd say, yeah, g'day, mate. How you going? Oh, I'm just going to talk to Thurston now.
And then I'll just talk about Lakers dominating. Anyway. Yeah, well, that's a whole different conversation.
That's a whole different podcast.
You had a couple of bits of news too.
Just a couple of things that sort of popped up this week was only recently Tim Manor, the Parramatta stalwart, been around a long time. He's had a few injuries probably in the last two or three seasons now that sort of stunted him a little bit, but he's hanging up the boots.
Yeah.
So, you know, a one man club, 233 first grade games. You know, played a few State of Origins when he was at his peak. You know, played in a grand final with the Eels and was that 2009? So yeah, he's decided to hang him up. He was, as far as I know, what I've read a little while ago, that he was looking at going to the West Tigers. But obviously that's whether that's fallen through or whether he has just said, nah, I'm done. So that was only sort of recent-ish news in the last couple of days. But one thing that I sort of heard earlier in the week was the retirement of Kane Elgee.
Yeah, that was when I heard.
The former Gold Coast and Manly Seagulls.
Yeah.
5'8", which I thought was a little bit out of the blue.
25.
He's come out and said that he's just lost the love for the game.
Yeah.
So he's obviously he wasn't the Dylan Walker was the preferred choice at 5'8". For Desi Hasler most of the year when Walker was available. So, yeah, he was stuck running around in the Canterbury Cup in reserve grade. So, for me, he had all the potential in the world when he was at the Gold Coast. So, he had that ACL tear and then he rehabbed and then the rehab didn't go very well. So yeah, it sort of took him a little bit longer to get back up to sort of first grade standard, and Manly picked him up, and he still had 1 year left on his Manly deal. So the article that I read didn't really go into what's actually going to happen with that, whether he's just going to forego the money and the contract, and Manly will have that disposable money next year in the salary cap. I'm not 100% sure about that. So, but yeah, that was a bit disappointing. So,
yeah,
good young lad, and that's all the potential in the world. I thought he was pretty good. Him and Ash Taylor before Ash Taylor got rich, but you know that halves combination on the Gold Coast. So, that's a little disappointing to hear. But wish him all the best, and yeah, hopefully he's young enough that, you know, it'd be easy enough for him to rediscover the passion for the game. And, you know, who's to say that we don't see him again playing first grade?
Well, just reading his Instagram post, it looks like he's moving back to the Gold Coast. Because, like you said, where he's from and he wants to be with his girlfriend and that. So you're right, he might find love of the game, which, you know, would be great for the Gold Coast. I mean, anything would be good for the Gold Coast, unfortunately, but
they just need some. Yeah, oh boy, I think they need a little bit more than Kane Elgee.
Yeah,
they need a New York Jets practice squad running back. I think that would help them.
Yeah, don't think that's going to happen. Don't think they're going to afford that, but anyway.
Nah, that's all right, because the Cowboys have got enough money up the sleeve for him to come back home, so that's, anyway.
The other couple of bits of news, the Brody Croft secretly, let's call it, meeting with Anthony Seibold on one of the busiest
secret
cafes.
Secret squirrels meeting.
We're on the busiest cafe streets in Sydney. So, which apparently, like, if I was listening to a couple of Fox Sports, NRL 360, and they reckon there's about 5 agents that have coffees there daily. I guess agents for NRL players that have coffee there daily, not just at this one, but along there. So they would have walked down and all these agents would have noticed these guys straight away. So
is that smart or is that stupid? Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, is it a ploy? Is that a ploy? Yeah. But apparently Craig Bellamy was none too happy about it.
Ooh, he was not, because as far as he was aware that Brody Croft wasn't even in Sydney, he was still...
Well, he can't. I mean, it's not as if he's got a bloody prison, an ankle bracelet that he's in prison. He can get wherever he wants, but yeah.
No, I get that, but maybe there's a... Yeah, well, who knows? Maybe he was, you know... Well, who knows? I guess, yeah, I suppose you're right, but, you know, they probably... He thought he was in Melbourne, and, yeah, I guess he had no idea. It's not like he's in trouble or anything, but...
No.
You're right. I think that was a definite, I guess, ploy on Brisbane's part to at least, like, I guess, see the feelers out there. Like, same as, and it's probably what they did with Matt Lodge. I think the whole captain thing with Matt Lodge, I think that was just to put the feelers out there. I don't know if that was ever going to happen or is still going to happen, but I think it was just a ploy to sort of put the feelers out there, see what people thought of, yes, the whole Brody Croft thing. And I get, you know, it just seemed too similar.
Yeah, for me, the message that it says to me, or, you know, not the message, but what it says to me is what kind of message is that sending to the young crop of halves that the Broncos have anymore? Yep. Tom Dearden, Jake Turpin, who's not really a half. He's more of a dummy half hooker rather than being a halfback. He was only there through necessity because everybody else was hurt. And the young fella, Sean O'Sullivan, as well. What sort of message is that sending to them if they're sort of, you know, having these little secret squirrel meetings with Brody Croft? You know, is that a trust thing? Is that, so you don't trust us, so you've got to get somebody from outside the club? I just don't like the message that sends to these young guys who they've blooded this year.
Or is that a motivating squirrel? They would have tagged them. Yeah.
Well, and yeah, it just depends on what sort of young kids they are, whether they use that as motivation or whether they use that as something to get sort of down in the dumps in and go, oh, well, that's it. I want out of here. So, I just think that doesn't send the greatest message.
I think that Tom Dearden, I think, say, he's still extremely young and, I think he looks like a top player. You know, he's extremely young. He probably needs to put a bit more beef on him. But he, you know, those
youngsters do, unless you're Payne Huss or David Fifita.
Good point. I think he just.
You imagine their grocery bill. Good grief.
Well, it's like any of those. I guess you look at your Payne Huss. If he's got like three brothers or something, and then they'd all be massive. That'd be like. They'd be eating a cart and a half of Weet-Bix every day, every morning.
Oh, yeah. Could you imagine the poor Sims family, you know, the Sims parents with Ruan Sims, Ashton Sims, Corbin Sims, and Tarek Sims? You imagine trying to feed those four mouths? Holy mackerel.
I like that Tom Dearden. I hope they sort of, they still got to blood him a little bit more, but I hope they at least
he was the first choice, first cab off the rank that they wanted to try and blood in the halves, and then he got hurt, and then they just, like I said, out of necessity they had to put Jake Turpin in there at halfback. So yeah, I think that's not the best message to be sending to young blokes, but like you said, you know, however they want to use that as motivation, That's on those guys.
Yeah. I guess with Brodie Croft, just quickly, what are your thoughts if he goes to Brisbane? Is it a good fit, even?
It depends on who they want to pair him with.
Well, that's true.
Do they want to pair him with Milford? Like, who are they pairing him with at 5'8"?
Yeah,
Brodie Croft could play 5'8" and then blood the young fella Dearden.
Yeah.
And leave Milford at fullback and where the hell are you gonna find a spot for Darius Boyd they've got a lot of things to work out this off season, Brisbane.
Yeah.
They're gonna be a very, very busy club for the next couple of months. There's gonna be not a lot of time off for them.
I guess, you're right, they need a lot to work out. Plus I think they were talking that starting Darius at center next year. So, you're right, but it's all up in the air. Who knows?
So, do we want to have a quick Antonio Brown? Antonio Brown, yeah, watching some NRL over in the States. You know, there's not really much to say, but yeah, he must have been channel flicking and it's popped up, and then he's jumped on Twitter and sort of giving out the hashtag Roosters and Storm, and it sort of caught the eye of a few people over here. So that's interesting to sort of interesting note.
Plus the hashtag plenty of time today. Of course, you got plenty of time.
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, he mustn't have had too many classes at Central Michigan that day. So
don't think so. I guess it's. I mean, if for anyone that doesn't know Antonio Brown, this guy, I guess, is exiled from the NFL. A superstar wide receiver on his day and on his time. But a lot of discretions has happened in the past, even let's just say 2 months. And it's well known. So for him to sort of come out.
He's been a loose cannon.
To tweet and have a hashtag of NRL, like you just said, would have got a lot of eyes on the, I guess, on him, and then on the NRL, and it still might. So, yeah, I guess it was just funny that he was watching the game.
So just on grand final day, the other two events that will be happening will be there's the NRLW women's grand final is the Dragons and the Broncos. So good luck to those ladies there, and also the interstate. Well, yeah,
I know, because sure of the way Broncos
plenty of support played. There for them.
The way Broncos played against the Warriors.
That's right. The interstate cup grand final is the Burley Bears, who defeated the winner Manly Seagulls in the Q Cup grand final, against the Newtown Jets, who defeated the Wentworthville Magpies, who both of those squads are littered with first graders. So you would think they would be very heavy favourites against the Burley Bears. So they're the two other games that'll be going on grand final day.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're right. Just, I guess, with that, Newtown Jets, they are littered. Littered with, it's, I don't know if it's the same rules as the old rules where you play a certain amount of games and you can drop back if your team is not playing league.
You've got to be eligible. You've got to play enough reserve grade to be able to qualify for those reserve grade. Because I'm pretty sure that Anthony Don, I think. Which is surprising that he didn't, or that he had played enough games for the Burley Bears to be eligible to play in this grand final. So that was interesting. But yeah, the other two teams are just absolutely littered with first graders.
And it's a New South Wales team, so they should always win anyway. Just to finish on that one.
Yeah.
Well, at least this year.
That's nice.
Oh, that is nice. You know, just this year.
So before we go, Before we sign off, I've just got double bird. Just before we sign off, I just want to go through, almost like before the Dally M's actually come out on Wednesday. Just thought I'd get my picks, picks in on, who the best players in the league were, and just get your thoughts on it. I thought the fullback of the year was Roger Tuivasa-Sheck.
Yeah,
I thought he was an absolute beacon of light for the Warriors in a very, very poor, very poor season. Mm-hmm. Winger of the year for me was Josh Addo-Karr. I don't think you could really go wrong with him being the winger of the year. A pillar of consistency, really. Center of the year for mine was Latrell Mitchell.
Really?
I thought he was terrific. I thought he was terrific a lot of this season. I couldn't decide 5-8 of the year. So 5-8 of the year, I sort of had a duel, Cameron Munster and Luke Keary.
Yeah,
so
I
sort of yeah.
Yeah, I had a couple of these sort of names written down. I guess most of them I'm sort of happy with. I guess at the start, I thought Blake Ferguson. I just sort of throw in. I thought he had a wow of a season.
I tossed up that O'Carr or Blake Ferguson. So, I just went with that O'Carr.
Yeah.
I thought halfback of the year was Cherry Evans.
Yeah, I agree.
I thought he was great and led Manly, who basically had their depth tested to the max.
Yeah.
And they still played terrific footy.
Yeah.
Prop of the year for mine was Nelson Asafa-Solomona. I thought he was ridiculous all year. There's a few that you could have given it to, but I thought he was right up there. Your number nine, so dummy half of the year, I thought Damian Cook. He was excellent. He couldn't fold anything that he did. Second rower was a bit of a no-brainer. Was David Fifita.
Yeah, I agree. Just
a monster. And lock of the year was a no-brainer in Cameron Murray.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you're right. Cameron Murray definitely. I guess Jake Chaboyevich would be in there, but probably on the bench, sort of player of the year.
I definitely had him in consideration.
And not, I guess, not to. I get the only sort of dummy half I sort of have, purely because he steered the ship again and again, was Cameron Smith. But.
Oh, no, of course.
I could sort of go, I guess either way in terms of that. I notice, I guess you said you got this, team of the year. You mentioned Tuivasa-Sheck, but no, I guess Tedesco.
No, because he's the Dally M winner.
He is a player of the year. Yeah, okay.
He is the player of the year. So I didn't want to, I thought I'd sort of share the love around a little bit and not. And not give two awards to one person. So
that's not a bad idea.
He's getting the big tamale. So, and for me, I thought for most improved, I sort of just threw that in a little bit. Even though they don't do that, the Dally M's, they sort of do captain of the year and representative player of the year, which is rubbish. I sort of threw in most improved, and I sort of had two names out there, which was Moses Suli for Manly. I thought he made a rapid improvement after all the rubbish that he sort of went through at the start of the year and being booted from essentially being booted out of the Tigers and then being booted from the Bulldogs before he even played a game, and then Desi Hasler gets a hold of him and he played terrific. And the other name I had was Katoni Staggs from the Broncos.
Yeah,
I thought he came along in leaps and bounds this year.
I did have a rookie down, like a rookie of the year, because we were talking about Dally M's. I kind of think it starts and ends with Payne Haas, doesn't it? Or well, that's who I had.
I think it's Mike Acebo.
Yeah, I don't know. I just you know, I don't know if that was, I mean, I had him down, I don't know if it was towards the end of the year and sort of like the hype. I mean, he got the most tries. I just thought Payne Huss was too consistent of every single game. Like he just.
Oh yeah, know. No, yeah, down for sure. That you can't fault either or those two picks. I don't think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely can't fault either one of those. So, no, I've got to tell you, I've got no problems with that at all. Yeah, Payne Haas was, yeah, it's, I mean, he played representative football. He, you know, he'd be in line for an Australian jumper. So, I don't think he can't fault any of that.
Interestingly enough, I guess they're finishing on the Dally M's, like the team of the year, it felt a lot more wide open this year instead of, well, the Dally M, you're right, it's most likely going to go Tedesco, but I meant like the players of the year of each, I guess, individual position. There's no big standouts on any position. There was a few decent players in a lot of positions, I thought.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, definitely. But I just wanted to try and get them out there so we could say that we had our picks out there before the Dally M's did, so.
Because I'm sure they'll contact us just to sort of confirm anyway, so I'm sure
you've got up the line somewhere. Yeah, that's fine. We're on Twitter, so they can get a hold of us either there or on Facebook, so yeah, they can contact us for sure.
Oh, you are the best segue person ever. So that was my segue to sort of mention the socials. Just to finish up, you threw it out there. So Twitter's at the Final Play Pod, and on Facebook and SoundCloud, you segue master. So
professional, mate. That's all it is.
Oh, of course it is. I forgot how professional you were.
I can be humble when it calls for. So you know, that's fine.
Yep, humble that. Well, that'll do it for us. Have a good week, everyone. Have a good NRL Grand Final week.
Enjoy the Grand Final, everybody, and we'll have a Grand Final wrap up for our last NRL pod for the year. So we might even run through some of the, you know, a bit of a rundown of the teams.
Yeah,
and their goods and their good, the bad, and the ugly. Of the teams from this year. So, watch out for that. And enjoy Grand Final Day, everybody, on Sunday.
Could be some surprise guests on that one. So we'll see.
You always like surprise guests.
Yeah, who doesn't like surprise guests?
Love surprise guests.
Have a good week, everyone. See ya.
Enjoy Grand Final, everybody. See ya.
Peace.